this challenging? Because what a lot of people don't realize is that specifically in migraine especially, the neck can become extremely sensitive because of migraine. You know, migraine is characterized by sensitivities, right? People get sensitive to light, to sound, to different things. What a lot of people don't realize is the neck also becomes really sensitive because of migraine. And what this means is that if you do anything to the neck when it's sensitized, it's very likely to be painful.
Neck pain is one of the most common and troubling symptoms linked to migraine. Between 7 and 9 out of 10 people with migraine or headache experience it. Research also shows that if you have neck pain, you're more likely to suffer from migraine or tension-type headache. To help us unpack this interconnection, we're joined by Zeki Lang, a specialist musculoskeletal physiotherapist and lecturer at the University of Queensland. With over 15 years of clinical and research experience, including award-winning work on neck pain and headache, Dr. Liang is one of the world's leading experts in the field. Today, she'll share what's really happening in the neck and how that knowledge can shape safer, more effective treatment. Dr. Liang, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you very much for having me, Carl.
Neck pain is one of the most common complaints in people with migraine. To start off, does neck pain cause migraine, or does migraine cause neck pain, or is it both?
That's a great question, Carl. And the simple answer is that it's both. But I would like to clarify that a little bit. So neck pain doesn't cause migraine. It may be one of the triggers that can contribute to the onset of a migraine attack. Strictly speaking, it's not a cause. But what many people don't realize is that migraine can actually cause neck pain. And what we've basically found in our research is that there's quite a few people who have neck pain but have nothing wrong with their necks, which means that the neck pain is entirely part of the migraine, one of the migraine symptoms.
So how can patients and doctors tell whether neck pain is a symptom of migraine or if there's a separate neck problem that might be triggering headache?
This is extremely challenging, as basically what my PhD research was all about. And basically what we found is that people with problems in their neck that's actually causing neck pain presents very similarly to people who have got nothing wrong with their neck and their neck pain is entirely from their migraine. And really, the only way we can be certain is to do a very comprehensive physical assessment of the neck function. So looking at how well the neck moves, you know, how well the neck muscles function, whether there's any stiffness, weakness, to be very certain that they have, you know, overall musculoskeletal dysfunction that's similar to your typical neck strain or your typical musculoskeletal neck disorder. And what we found is that by doing that, you can identify whether someone looks exactly like the person who strained their neck and have got a musculoskeletal condition of the neck, or no, you know, overall the function is good, which means then that there's nothing with the neck and the neck pain is actually part of migraine.
What is a cervicogenic headache and how is it different from migraine?
So a cervicogenic headache is basically a referred headache, meaning that the headache is actually stemming from something else. And in this case, cervical structures. So basically, you've got a musculoskeletal strain or injury in the neck, typically in the upper cervical spine, so from C1 to C3. And from there, the pain is experienced in the head. So the pain is referred from the neck into the head. And typically, musculoskeletal treatments, you know, that addresses the impairments of the neck will resolve this headache.
Can you define musculoskeletal for us?
Yeah, so if you think about straining your neck, you know, or straining your ankle, if you sprain your ankle or you went for a run and you don't usually do a run and you injured your knee because you've done too much running, same thing in the neck. So your neck has got joints and muscles just like you do in your leg. And if you say you did something unusual, like sat in an awkward position for longer than you should have, or you did something at a gym. So if you put mechanical stresses to these muscles and joints, then you create a strain, and we call that like a musculoskeletal injury, and that's basically the musculoskeletal disorder that we're referring to.
So if talking about cervicogenic headache, what is occipital neuralgia and how is that different from migraine and cervicogenic headache?
So the occipital neuralgia is quite different because neuralgia refers to nerves, right? So it's basically the occipital nerve that's getting irritated, and the pain is actually stemming primarily from the nerves themselves. And typically this is felt in when you palpate the occipital nerves, and it's in the distribution of occipital nerves, which is posterior at the back of your head. It can coexist with cervicogenic headache, but it doesn't always coexist.
Do they often get misdiagnosed?
I think there's definitely people out there. I mean, in our research, we interviewed lots of people with migraine and neck pain, and we found that a lot of people don't quite understand whether the neck is contributing to the migraine, whether there's something wrong in the neck that they should get treatment for or not. And of course, some people have both, right? They have something in the neck that might be contributing in some part to the migraine, and then the neck pain is also, you know, caused by and contributed to from the migraine itself. So it's actually very tricky for people to work out themselves. And then there's been some research in Italy some time ago, which also showed that a lot of people with migraine were actually presenting to primary care clinicians thinking that they actually have a neck-related headache rather than migraine. So they were getting misdiagnosed at the beginning, thinking that they didn't have migraine.
So to avoid that misdiagnosis or, I guess, underdiagnosis that might occur as well, that's where it really comes back to that exam that you were talking about, having a thorough exam. Who would be the best position to do that? Is that the GP or do you need to see someone else?
I think the GP is essential, right, in recognizing whether someone has got migraine or not, because migraine has the typical features of, you know, phonophobia, nausea, etc. So the diagnosis of migraine is crucial. Of course, if the patient presents to a physiotherapist as the first call, then as first contact practitioners, we should not miss that this person actually has got migraine. Finding out whether they've actually got something wrong with the neck, the best profession for this is actually physical therapists or physiotherapists, because we specialize in musculoskeletal injuries. We are trained in doing a very detailed examination of the cervical spine. So, you know, someone who's got experience in examining patients with headaches, who's also experienced in examining the cervical spine, is the best person. And it is challenging, because what a lot of people don't realize is that specifically in migraine especially, the neck can become extremely sensitive because of migraine. You know, migraine is characterized by sensitivities, right? People get sensitive to light, to sound, to different things. What a lot of people don't realize is the neck also becomes really sensitive because of migraine. And what this means is that if you do anything to the neck when it's sensitized, it's very likely to be painful. So patients will experience that themselves, you know, when they're about to have a migraine attack and the neck becomes very sensitive because of that, you know, onset prodromal phase of migraine attack, then whatever they do, they might be sitting at work, they might be doing something in the garden, and you start to feel like the neck starts to get very tight, irritable, painful. And it's actually not that they've strained their neck necessarily, but because the neck is now becoming very sensitive and it's getting irritated by usual activities that they would normally tolerate.
That's really interesting. I mean, going back to the description you gave about how you might be experiencing the prodrome of a migraine attack, so the early phase of a migraine attack, and then all of a sudden your neck is getting tight, it's getting irritable, and it feels like it's sore, like you might have strained it, when actually it's just part of the migraine, and that's how migraine is being expressed in your body.
And that's such a crucial window, because if patients understand that, well, that's the time to take action, right? Because we all know that acute migraine medications work best when taken early in the onset of migraine and not when it's late.
What are the neurophysiological and musculoskeletal mechanisms that underlie neck pain in migraine?
Okay, so the neurophysiological mechanisms of neck pain, put simply, will be the mechanisms related to migraine itself. So it will be the referred pain, the neurological aspects of the migraine being activated within the neuronal networks within the brain, and the physiological effects of things changing, and that is what's causing the referral of pain into the neck. So that's the migraine aspects of migraine-referred neck pain, to put it simply. Then the musculoskeletal effects of mechanisms of neck pain will be basically the local cervical musculoskeletal structures being injured or strained, and that's what's producing the nociception, or you know what people would typically term the painful input into the brain that produces that sensation of neck pain or neck discomfort. So in people with migraine, they can have one or the other, or they could have both. And that's a challenging to work out, because in many people, they probably have both. And so if you treat the neck itself, you're improving the local musculoskeletal mechanisms of neck pain. But if you don't improve migraine, then they might still be having some neck pain that's referred from migraine. And therefore, they need to manage the migraine better.
You don't have to take it in all at once. You can return to extended interviews at your own pace with the All Access Pass. JM, another one of our community members, asked about skeletal misalignment and how that may be playing a role.
So skeletal misalignment is an interesting one, because there's been quite a lot of research that shows that, you know, if you took everyone on the street and you image their spine, you're going to find a group of people with skeletal misalignment, for sure. But amongst the group of people with skeletal misalignment, only some of them will actually have symptoms. And you may question, oh, but how about the rest? Would they go on to develop symptoms then? Not necessarily. So what we do know is that, you know, our human bodies deal with imperfections. Just because you've got a skeletal alignment doesn't necessarily mean that it will create problems for you. But of course, if it is creating problems for you, then there are ways to deal with it. Is this a permanent misalignment, you know, like a scoliosis that's congenital? Or is this a functional misalignment, meaning you are, you know, have the habit of positioning yourself a certain way, in which case you could change that, you know? And if it is a permanent one, like a congenital scoliosis or something similar that is not changeable, then there are ways to manage it, you know, by doing certain exercises to reduce the stiffness and doing certain exercises to strengthen the muscles that might be weak to help you maintain a better alignment and to reduce the risk of it worsening.
Can you explain the trigeminocervical complex and the connection between the nerves in the neck and the trigeminal system, and why this makes the neck so relevant in migraine?
Absolutely. So the trigeminal cervical complex, or some people call it the trigeminal cervical nucleus, is basically an area in the brain stem, so at the base of the brain, basically, where the nerves converge. So it's a congregation of nerves from your neck, from your head and your face. So all these nerves that send messages from your neck, face and head will meet within this complex. And then from there, a second set of nerves send the messages up to the rest of your brain. So if you're thinking about it, it's like two teams, right? The first team is sending messages to this complex, and then the second team sends messages up to the brain. So what then happens is that sometimes the second set of messages getting sent up to the brain gets a bit mixed up. So they're not quite sure whether the messages are solely coming from the neck or coming from the brain, or sorry, from the head or the face, or both. And therefore, you get referred pain. And we see this in clinical studies where, you know, you stimulate the area of the neck or some of certain components of the neck joints, and then the person experiences pain in the head. And it's because the nerve sending the messages up to the brain, the second set of nerves, is not sure where the messages are coming from. Is it coming from the neck? Is it coming from the brain, the head? And vice versa. So if you have nerves sending nociceptive or painful messages from the head or face, and it goes to that complex, and then from there, the message goes up to the brain, but the brain is not sure, then it might think that the message is coming from the neck as well. So then you start to get pain, not just from the head and face, but you also feel it in the neck. So basically, this complex explains why people with migraine can get neck pain that's entirely referred from the migraine. It's got nothing to do with the neck And also it explains why people with cervicogenic headache have got nothing wrong in the head or in the brain, and it's entirely a cervical strain that's referring pain into the head.
I guess it explains why some people with migraine will have a migraine attack that starts and finishes in the neck. And the only reason they know it's a migraine is because it responds to migraine treatments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that complex is also one of the reasons why the neck becomes so sensitive. So, you know, we talk about a referral of pain, but sensitization also gets referred. So a lot of people know that they are sensitive to different stimuli because of migraine. Well, the neck also becomes sensitive once, you know, once the processes start ramping up within the brain, those processes spread into that trigeminal cervical complex, which then makes the neck very sensitive as well.
Before we jump into treatment options and discussing some of the evidence and safety for those, there's one more community question from Deb, who has degenerative or ruptured cervical discs, and she's worried about how they might be contributing to her neck pain and migraine condition.
I can absolutely understand how this might be very worrying for lots of patients. Imaging is part of the story, and changes in the joints and, you know, structures as we age do occur. And yes, sometimes we call them degenerative changes. And again, it's just trying to work out whether these changes are relevant to the symptoms that you're experiencing. And there are many ways to manage them. I mean, one of the typical results or symptoms that people get from having these changes is that they become extremely stiff. So there are ways to manage their stiffness. You may not be able to change the stiffness entirely, but often patients find that if they can do certain exercises or have certain treatments that can improve the mobility by a certain amount, then the symptoms actually reduce greatly.
Diving into treatment options now, I'd love to evaluate a couple of different categories of treatments on evidence and safety, starting with medications. What role do you see for standard migraine medications, both preventive and acute, in reducing neck pain symptoms?
Some patients tell you upfront that, you know, when I have an acute migraine attack, the best thing for me is to take the acute migraine medication, you know, and that abolishes it immediately. So, you know, and then there are patients who clearly experience lots of frequent migraine attacks, and they are in the category of chronic migraine, which really need preventative medication. And sometimes they are hesitant, or they have misconceptions about taking medications, and, you know, so they're not keen to take it, or they haven't been advised on taking it. And definitely that's when we highly recommend that they see a neurologist or a specialized GP with that knowledge to help work them through the correct medication.
And part of the reason for that is because sometimes getting an appropriate and effective treatment can solve the neck pain problem before you're going anywhere else.
Absolutely. I've got many examples of this where we ask the patient and they say, yeah, once I took the correct preventative medication, my neck pain went. And this is an interesting thing. In my research, we looked at more than 100, you know, 200 neck pain patients now with migraine. And a lot of them, even when they were not having their migraine attack, they were experiencing neck pain. So they say, how can there be nothing wrong with my neck? You know, I have neck pain almost every day. I have it so often, even when I'm not having my migraine attack. So how can there be nothing wrong with my neck? And yet when we do a full assessment, there is nothing wrong with the neck. And so our hypothesis is that, you know, even when they're not experiencing their full-blown migraine attack, the migraine mechanisms are still working in the background. Just like a lot of migraine patients say that, you know what, I'm always sensitive to light. Even when I'm not having my attack, I always don't like to go out without my sunglasses. So we know that migraine symptoms are present and can be present at all times, even when you don't have a full migraine attack. And neck pain is one of those.
Just like looking at the sun when you're light sensitive is going to aggravate your light sensitivity. It makes a lot of sense now that it's explained that way. Does that also suggest that lifestyle changes, such as maybe posture or sleep, hydration, ergonomics, can that help with the neck pain in migraine? And is that because it's helping the neck, or is it because it's helping migraine, or is it a bit of both?
Yeah, oh, that's a great question, Carl. I mean, we know that the migraine triggers often have a dose effect response. Meaning, if you think about your tolerance or your resilience like a bucket, and it fills up with different things, the different triggers that you put into the bucket. And when it hits a certain threshold, it overflows and bang, you have the migraine attack. So it may not be the one trigger that causes the migraine attack, you know, it could be multiple triggers. And that's the thing, right? Helping patients understand that, okay, I know you've tried to address your sleep and it hasn't done much for you, but you know what? If you address your sleep plus regular nutrition intake, regular hydration, you know, so if and my regular brain breaks or, you know, relaxation strategies, or, you know, if you add a combination of the modifiable lifestyle factors that we know can contribute to migraine, then you might start to see effect.
Can exercise alone stave off neck issues from developing? Like, is there a certain amount of activity? And I know that there's a lot of people watching with chronic migraine and exercise is, you know, very challenging in that setting. But for people who may be lower frequency or who are looking for more reasons to exercise, can that alone help stave off neck issues?
There's two issues here, neck issues and migraine, right? Let's talk about migraine first, because there's good research to show that if you engage in regular aerobic exercise, it can help with migraine. But you're absolutely right, Carl, that a lot of people find it very hard to do that. And one of the reasons is that once they exercise, it triggers the migraine. So this is where we need to be very tailored in our exercise prescription. And patients might find it very hard to do themselves. You know, is understanding what the exercise threshold is and gradually exposing them to little bits and little bits of regular exercise. And that, yes, you may experience a little bit of aggravation of your migraine, hopefully not too much. If we dosed it correctly to begin with, you might experience a little bit of aggravation, but not the full-blown attack. And then your body, your brain starts to gradually adapt to increasing amounts of aerobic exercise. Your resilience improves, your tolerance, your thresholds improve, and the thresholds for everything else improves too. Now, that said, for some patients, it may be that for them to exercise properly or at the intensity without triggering the migraine, they need to address other lifestyle factors as well, like having better nutrition, better hydration, better sleep, or making sure they're not trying to exercise in bright sunlight, or, you know, so it's working out what else can be optimized so that they have more tolerance for the exercise. And it's often, you know, chicken and egg, they all feed into each other. So a lot of, some patients with migraine also have a lot of sleep problems. And, you know, sleep, we know poor sleep contributes to migraine. So if they are not sleeping well, they're tired, they don't feel like exercising. But we also know that if you exercise, it helps with your sleep. So it's trying gradually to help people make small changes step by step. So that's one thing. You asked about how exercise may help neck pain. It's different for everyone, you know. Some people say, oh, if I have neck pain, I go to get up and move around, it makes me feel better. And generally, that's the case. If you change your postures, if you move, your joints feel happier. I mean, if you think about any joint, like your hand, if it's held like this for a short while, it's fine. If you hold it like this for too long, it's going to feel uncomfortable. You move it a bit, it feels much better. So generally speaking, any kind of exercise should make the neck feel better. But of course, if you're running like that for half an hour, then your neck's not going to be happy. And same thing, if you're in a gym lifting weights in an unideal neck posture that's straining your neck, then that's not going to be great. And for some patients, their neck muscles do not match up to their body muscles. So their arms can lift the weights really well, but past a certain point, the neck starts to lose control because the neck muscles are getting tired. So then they need to do specific exercises to strengthen the neck to keep up with the rest of the body, you know. So in those situations, they need to seek, you know, more help in helping them retrain their neck or look at the way they're doing those exercises.
How effective is physical therapy in managing neck pain and migraine?
So we do know that there's research that looks at neck treatments for migraine. And the earlier research only used certain types of neck treatments, like they might have only done some manual therapy to the neck. And we know that when you do that for any condition, the effects may not be the best. And that's the same for migraine. The more recent studies look at a combination of treatments. So they do neck manual therapy, you know, doing some mobilization, manipulation, that type of thing. But then they also do neck exercises. But they also do a lot of advice and education. And the research shows that if you add on the education, you get better effects. And that makes sense, right? Because we know that some people have got something wrong with your neck, some people don't. But to date, older research treats everyone the same. Like they give everyone neck treatment, they give everyone education advice without trying to differentiate out whether these people have got neck problems or not. So in a clinical setting, as we discussed just now, we first try to make sure whether someone actually has got a cervical disorder or not. You know, do they need to improve their neck function or not? If they don't, and we think that the neck pain is predominantly or entirely referred from migraine, we work on the things that improve migraine.
In which cases would more advanced interventions like radio frequency ablation be considered?
Well, certainly that could be an option to be considered. But, you know, at the end of the day, whether you do those therapeutic interventions or not, you still have to address the underlying problems. So we see that in old musculoskeletal injuries, right? That if you block up the pain by ablating the nerve, that can help with the pain for a short while. And this might create a wonderful window of opportunity for you to start doing the right exercises to restore good movement, to restore good muscle function. But what we also know is that if you block out the nerves and you block out the pain, but you don't restore normal function, then after a while, the nerve grows back, the same problems arise.
We know that hypermobility is something that is common amongst people with migraine. What are the risks of cervical manipulation in hypermobile patients?
So in a very skilled practitioner, the risk is very low. And that's it. You have to screen for other potential red flags or contributing or factors that might put you at higher risk. So if you are at low risk, when we talk about risk, we're talking about a dissection, blood vessel getting injured and bleeding, basically. But the risk of that is generally low in young, healthy people. So if you are a low-risk individual to begin with and it's a skilled practitioner doing it and they don't do it at the level where you are most hypermobile and where the blood vessels are most at risk, which is in the upper cervical spine, C1-2 region, is where the vessels are most kinked, most curved and twisted. And so if you stretch them there where they're already very stretched, they are at higher risk. So a good clinician usually avoids those type of techniques and it will be relatively safe. But that said, you know, if you are not getting your risk factors screened properly and the clinician is not the most skilled, then certainly there are risks. So you have to be very careful who you go to and why you're going there, you know, because if you're going there for pain relief, there are also other types of manual therapy techniques that are not risky and will not give you that same level of risk.
One of our community members, Karen, reported a vertebral, I think I'm pronouncing it right, a vertebral artery dissection and stroke after cervical manipulation. How real is this risk? We don't want to frighten people entirely away from this, but that's going to be something they have to be aware of as a risk, right?
So this is exactly what I was talking about. So the vertebral artery is a small artery that goes inside the vertebra itself. So it's in the neck itself. And with cervical manipulations, that's the highest risk that we're talking about here. That artery is the one that dissects, meaning it ruptures or it bleeds, and that causes a stroke. And so it's a real risk. And like what we're discussing before, Kyle, it's dependent on the individual. Some people are higher risk than others. You know, if you have already underlying cardiovascular issues, that puts you at higher risk, you know. So like I say, you know, going to the right clinician and understanding why you're doing this and also accepting your own level of risk. I mean, some people are very risk tolerant, others are not. And if there's the slightest chance of a possibility, you know, don't do it, right? You know, it just depends on what you're trying to achieve. And like I said, there are other techniques that can produce similar effects that you could also consider.
What's the one thing you'd like people to remember about migraine, neck pain, and treatment options?
I think the most important thing to remember is that your neck pain can be coming from your migraine. It can be coming from your neck. It can be one or the other. It could be both. And of course, the treatment is very different if it's coming from one or the other. So, you know, it might be very difficult for you to work it out yourself. So if you're not sure, you should definitely seek help from an experienced clinician who can examine your neck to find out what's going on so that you get the best targeted treatment that you need.
Where can we learn more about what you're doing or follow your work?
I do have an ORCID account, so you can look up my research papers. I'm still in the process of writing up a few more at the moment, so I'll be interested in sharing more of that research. But feel free to contact me as well. I love hearing people's stories about what they've experienced. Part of my PhD research was interviewing patients, and it was really fascinating hearing their experiences in their journey, and you know, and that really helps with the research as well.
Well, Dr. Leanne, thank you so much for joining us on the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you very much for having me.